9 years ago this week, then-Governor Scott Walker signed Act 10 into law. The law effectively shut down union rights for most public workers. It was intended to address a roughly $3.5 billion projected structural budget deficit. The move sparked protests at the state capitol, and the law was challenged in state Supreme Court. The court upheld it. Walker survived a recall election, and Act 10 has stayed in place since then. But has it accomplished its goals? The John K. McIver Institute for Public Policy says the law has been very successful. Brett Healy is president of the McIver Institute, and he joins us now. Brett, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me on, Rob.
We'll lay out first the basics. What do you see as the key successes of Act 10?
Well, as you mentioned, this week was the 9th anniversary of the signing of Act 10. And so as part of that, we have been tracking the amount of savings that can be attributed to Act 10. And when you take a look at the amount of money saved from retirement and then from health care, we believe that the figure is north of $12 billion saved over 9 years. Obviously, when you take a look at the overall picture, most of that, $8 billion of that savings, comes from the contribution to pensions. If you remember, before Act 10, the vast majority of government employees in Wisconsin did not contribute towards their pension, and Act 10 had a requirement that they would effectively be required to contribute 6% towards their pension, and that has saved Wisconsin taxpayers almost $8 billion. And then the other big change under Act 10 was that they government employees would be required to contribute towards their own health insurance, 12%, if everyone remembers. And that change has saved over $4 billion in the 9 years since Act 10. So clearly, from a purely fiscal standpoint, it has been a huge success for Wisconsin taxpayers. I would also say that, like you mentioned, at the time we were facing a big deficit in our state budget, $3.6 billion. And by using Act 10, Governor Walker did not raise taxes, which was good for the taxpayers, but it also allowed the locals, governments, to ask their government employees to contribute towards retirement and pension, which allowed them to not have to lay off or fire employees to deal with this deficit. So I think in reality, when you take a step back 9 years later, this was a win-win-win for everyone here in Wisconsin. I know at the time, like you mentioned, there was quite a bit of chaos and upheaval at the Capitol, but the further we get away from that and we take a look at just the pure financial savings, $12 billion over 9 years, that's a huge success.
And how does that break down among state versus local governments and school districts?
If you take a look at the pension contributions, you go to the Employment Employee Trust Fund and the CAFR for the state of Wisconsin, you can easily track the amount of money that all units of government, were contributing to the retirement system. The state government employees have contributed $1 billion towards their retirement since Act 10. The University of Wisconsin won $1.1 billion. So you're talking a large amount of money at every level here in the state of Wisconsin. Pensions for schools, we saw a savings of $3 billion. So if you go to MacGyverInstitute.com, you can see the complete chart and look for yourself at how the savings breaks down.
Talking to Brett Healy, president of the McIver Institute, looking back on this this week's anniversary of the signing of Act 10, the law that restricted collective bargaining rights for public employees here in Wisconsin. Brett, some people have pointed toward teacher turnover, a lot of experienced teachers leaving, more reliance on younger, newer teachers in Wisconsin schools. Part of a nationwide trend in some ways, but some people here in the state pointing toward Act 10 exacerbating that. How do you read that?
I do think there was a uptick in the number of retirements of our more experienced teachers in 2010, 2011. I don't think there's any way around that. But I think overall, when you take a look at the number of individuals entering the teaching profession, as you point out, this is more of a nationwide trend and not just something that happened in Wisconsin. So clearly, there were some changes back in 2011. As you point out, we had less experienced teachers in front of the classroom. But I still believe if you take a step back and you look at things from a global perspective, these are still very good paying jobs with great benefits. And even though we've seen a slight decline nationwide in those entering the profession, I think that's something that's going to be addressed, not only here in Wisconsin, but across the country. And I think you'll start to see the number of teachers entering the profession tick upwards here soon.
There were arguments at the time and since, Brett, that this was politically motivated, that public employee groups were seen, probably rightly so, as supporting Democrats more in elections with campaign funding. And this was an effort to kneecap that key support for the Democratic side of elections. How do you answer that?
I don't think that was true. I think what the governor faced, Governor Walker faced, was a $3.6 billion hole in the budget. We were in some rough financial times, and he was looking around to see how we could address that without raising taxes. He was clear during his election. He was clear in 2011 that he was not going to raise taxes. And then if you take a step back, back then, government employees generally were not contributing towards their own pension. That obviously doesn't match what happens in the private sector. So the governor thought it would be a good idea to ask those employees to contribute to their pension. And then there's no way around it. Government healthcare benefits at the time were very, very good. And asking our government employees to contribute a small amount towards that is not unreasonable. So I think the governor found a practical and little did we know at the time, an incredibly valuable solution to our problem. And it was one that allowed him to keep his pledge not to raise taxes. And yet we didn't have mass firings of government employees here in Wisconsin like other states had. So I think it was the perfect solution for the time.
Now, getting kind of technical on state budgets, when we talk about that projected $3.5 billion deficit, used to talk to Todd Berry when he's with the Wisconsin Taxpayers Alliance, and he always kind of wanted me to throw quotes around the word deficit. This was, you know, projected into the next budget when we say that, and based on the budget request from each agency, which was always kind of highballing and it always came down. Was that $3.6 billion shortfall concept really what we would consider a deficit?
Well, it was the deficit projected for the end of that fiscal year. So at the time, we weren't expecting good economic growth, so you weren't going to see any added tax revenues coming into the state from the economy. So I do think it was realistic, and I don't think most people at the Capitol and probably across the state were really wanting to see huge cuts to actual programs. So I do think it was a real deficit, and I think this was a real solution to that problem.
We're talking to Brett Healy, president of the MacGyver Institute for Public Policy, looking at the effects of Act 10 over the last 9 years since it was signed into law. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What did you think of Act 10 in 2011? What do you think of it now? Do you still think about it now? Has your perspective changed one way or another? Were you personally impacted by it, for better or worse? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with Brett Healy, president of the McIver Institute for Public Policy. We're talking about Act 10 and its impact 9 years this week since then Governor Scott Walker signed into law. He says, and his organization did research that says it saved the state billions of dollars over that 9 years. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts. If you were happy to see Act 10 passed at the time, do you still think it was a good idea? If you're on the other side, are you still unhappy about it? Did it affect you personally one way or another? We'll go to your calls now. Scott is with us in Hudson. Scott, hello.
Hi. Got two things. First off, with the research that was done, was there any look into the actual quality of the education that was done afterwards?
Scott, thanks. Brett, I know this particular report, you were just looking at the fiscal impact, but this has been a heavily debated issue. Did this affect education in Wisconsin schools?
Yeah, like you said, this report just focused on the fiscal savings. I think if you take a look at separate education metrics, that's debatable. We still have one of the highest graduation rates in the entire country. Our ACT scores are fairly high in the rest of the country. We just switched to a new proficiency testing standard, and that is looking like it needs some improvement. Just 40% of our children are proficient in either English or math. Obviously not good enough, so we clearly need to do better there. We have seen in recent budgets a significant increase in education funding, billions of dollars. So the question remains if that all that money, all that new money, is going to make a dramatic difference in the quality of education in the state. That remains up to debate. I would point out that according to DPI, their own statistics, 54% of education funding goes towards instruction. I think most taxpayers, most parents, I know myself as a parent, I was surprised to hear that so little of our education funding actually goes towards instruction. So I think this is all open to debate. I do think, though, just focusing on strictly the money going to education, I don't think that's going to get us to where we want to be. I think we've got to have a broader conversation about the standards, what we're expecting of our students, what we're expecting of our teachers, our administrators, our parents. Clearly, some of this is on the children and the parents themselves. We need less time on Fortnite and spending time on sports, and we need more time spent every night working on our education. So I think that's a great question, and it's one that we're going to keep having a debate about for many, many years to come.
Thanks for that call. We'll go to Marty now in Madison. Marty, hello.
Hi. I'm calling to remind everybody that's listening that there's another face to this story. My kids were 10 and 12 when Act 10 was passed. I'm a state worker. I was getting paid $17 an hour at the time, and I had a waitressing job. I worked three nights a week. I was the only provider in my family. I was a single mom, and my ex-husband didn't support us. And to remind people, the expenses that came, that he's talking about, the savings, were expenses that were paid by state employees who gave up raises to barter for those, you know, bargain for those savings that he was just talking about. And those were real dollars that came out of my paycheck, like $400 or $500 a month. And furthermore, I lost my waitressing job because people weren't going out to eat. So I didn't have, I lost like $800 or $900 a month of income. I had to cancel my cell phone. I couldn't buy my kids clothes.
Marty, thanks for the call. Brett, Marty, talk about the impact on the workers who saw pay cuts at the time.
Oh, there's no doubt that it did have an immediate impact on state workers, but I would point out and I would argue that given the deficit we were facing and what you saw happen in other states across the country and in the Midwest where workers were, state government workers were actually laid off or fired. I think this was a better solution than that.
Thanks for the call. Let's go to Nate in Milwaukee now. Nate, hello.
Hi, thank you for having me. I was going to throw in 2 points. I might add in a little bit more, but first, when Act 10 was first proposed in the state legislature and being argued over, state worker unions offered to take every single actual financial cut that Scott Walker wanted if they left their bargaining rights and union rights alone. And that leads into the second point, which is most of the unions that were decertified because the method of certification election is very dishonest in that most of the votes come in as yes votes to keep their unions in these elections, and very few no votes come in, but they count anybody that they can claim is a member that didn't vote as a no vote. If I tried doing that in an election, it'd be called vote fraud or rigging the election, and I'd be thrown in jail.
Nate, thanks for the call. Brett, that first point, why not negotiate this in tough times? Nate's saying, and I remember at least some provisional offers to negotiate these savings without giving up the collective bargaining rights.
Well, I wasn't there in the room when all that was going on, but if you take Scott Walker at his word, he didn't think it was a sincere offer. Obviously, if you're looking to give taxpayers a seat at the table, you're going to have to make some changes so that collective bargaining isn't so heavily in favor of the union. So I think if unions believe that they are providing a service for their members or for potential members, that they will see an increase in their membership. We all know, though, since Act 10 and since Wisconsin became a right-to-work state, membership, especially in unions like WEAC, has fallen dramatically. And Wisconsinites are voting with their feet.
Speaks to Nate's second point that he says the deck was stacked effectively against unions that led to that decline is his argument. What do you say to that part of his statement?
And I would flip that on its head and argue that given the freedom, most Wisconsinites or most of the teachers in WEAC decided that they didn't need WEAC anymore and that they didn't want to pay that monthly fee to WEAC, some of which would then go to support candidates who teachers don't necessarily support. So I would look at this from a question of freedom. And given that freedom, it's clear that most Wisconsinites who were union members would prefer not to be. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's actually the way this thing should work. You shouldn't be forced to join a union. And I think Wisconsin's better off for making that change.
Thanks for the call. We're talking to Brett Healy from the McIver Institute for Public Policy on this week's ninth anniversary of Act 10. Time for another caller. Julie is with us in Blue Mounds. Julie, hello.
Hi. My comment is that, you know, first of all, you hack the union off at the knees and you're wondering why membership is falling is because the union has no power to do anything. Why would you pay for a service that, you know, they can't give you any service because, you know, you've crippled the union. And second of all, I just want to say that, you know, when you talk about attrition within the teaching profession, I have administrators and principals in my family, and they are having a very, very difficult time getting people to interview because there are no candidates. I think that the way in which the whole Act 10 was handled, instead of, you know, negotiating and trying to get people to come to the table, and, you know, everybody realizes that at some point they were going to have to pay for a portion of their retirement and their health care, but the way in which it was done vilified the profession so that kids going into school, who wants to, you know, pay for a four-year degree, and especially because college is so expensive now, take a job for three.
Julie, I'm going to jump in because we just have a couple minutes. I want to let Brett get in on that. She says, even if you agree with the notion that public employees should pay for the retirement and their health care, the style she saw as divisive, I guess, Brett.
You know, that's a fair point, but I think the vast majority of Wisconsinites value our teachers, value our schools. We want our kids to do well. We all realize that in order for our kids to do well, we got to have good teachers. I think that's why you've seen the last couple budgets, historic investment into K-12 education. I personally would love to see a system where we could allow teachers who are doing well in front of the classroom earn more money. I'd like to see, as I mentioned before, only 54% of our K-12 education funding goes back to instruction. I'd like to see that dramatically increase, 75%, 80%. We should be rewarding teachers who are doing the hard work, the real work in this, and not be spending so much money on non-instruction, bureaucrats, non-instruction items. So I agree with Julie. We need to reward teachers. We need to make it financially rewarding for them to enter into profession, but we've got to have an overall conversation about what that looks like and do better in making sure that actually the education funding reaches the instruction level.
Brett, that's all the time we have. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks, Rob.
That's Brett Healy, president of the McIver Institute for Public Policy. We talked to him today about his support for Wisconsin's Act 10 legislation that former Governor Walker signed into law 9 years ago this week. Coming up Monday on Central Time, the co-chairs of a federal committee on cybersecurity join the show. Wisconsin Representative Mike Gallagher and Maine Senator Angus King tell us we need to take action now. That and more coming up Monday here on Central Time.